Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Ask the CIO with your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is George Jacobson, the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration's Chief Information Officer. George, thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
Well, thank you very much, Jason. I'm thrilled to be here. Listened to your show several times. I'm happy to be a part of it.
If I would have known that, I'd have had you on sooner. But let me start with some basics. TIGDA is, as you guys are commonly known, the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. You guys are more known for the audit side, but you obviously are on the CIO side, so we're going to hit upon both a little bit. But just give me, what is the mission of TIGDA?
We like to say TIGDA has a mission like no other IG in the federal government. Our mission is to provide integrated audit, investigative, inspections, and evaluation services that promote the economy, efficiency, and integrity of the administration of the Internal Revenue laws. Now, what does that mean? More directly, we're specifically tasked with oversight of the IRS and their role as the principal tax administrator for the United States of America. We are auditing IRS activities to ensure they are providing fair treatment to taxpayers. We are ensuring that they are good shepherds of the funding that is provided to them across multiple perspectives. And we investigate activities that may result in or may be the result of waste, fraud, and abuse. Now, regardless of where that occurs within the IRS, that's all within our purview, and we track that down as necessary. So if it's in program management, if it's in procurement, doesn't matter. We have the charter to go look. On the flip side, we collaborate with them, cooperate with them to investigate those who have threatened or who have actually carried out threats against IRS employees, whether they provide those threats in terms of physical harm or to the electronic systems that support the administration of taxes. So, for example, a few years ago when that individual flew the plane into the Dallas building, that was our responsibility to go out and investigate, find out just what was going on there. So we work side by side with them to expose the tax scams, identity fraud, some of those things. And so to say that we have a complex relationship with the IRS would be a gross understatement.
Well, it's part law enforcement, part auditing, part oversight. I mean, there's definitely pieces to it. And you as the Chief Information Officer, you obviously have to support that mission. Give me a sense of how you do that, because there seems to be a lot of different pieces that you probably have to juggle.
We have three principal business areas here at TIGDA. We have our audit group, we have the investigative group, and then we have inspections. In addition to that, we have all of the things that you would find in any federal agency in terms of legal support, administrative support, HR, finance, all of those types of things. So we have to be held accountable for the monies that are provided to us as well. So the IT mission here is to develop, operate, and support information, technology, products, and services that facilitate the collection, management, analysis, and dissemination of data and information that support those business functions. So all of the things that you think of in terms of IT fall under my charter: operations and systems administration, network provisioning and operation, technology standards. We prosecute the IT security aspects of the organization, application development, and budgetary and acquisition strategies. Those are all part of our responsibilities. And when I say acquisition strategies, clearly IT focused.
Give me a sense of how your relationship then is to the Treasury CIO more broadly, or even the IRS CIO. Are you, if you will, a dotted line back to the IRS CIO, or is it a dotted line up to the Treasury CIO, or do you not answer to any of them?
That's an interesting question, and the short answer is we don't answer to any of those folks. The IG is an independent organization. We report to the Secretary. We meet routinely with the Commissioner. I am part of the CIO Council within Treasury, so I meet with my peers. But in terms of our reporting relationship, we answer to no one but Congress and the Secretary.
But as far as standards and enterprise-wide services and things like that, that's where that CIO Council, the Treasury-wide CIO Council, comes into play?
Oh, very clearly, we want to make sure that we're doing things in a collaborative fashion and that we are following the direction of the President. Being a part of the cabinet member organization, you certainly have to provide evidence that you are supporting the agenda of the administration. And so, clearly, FSMA, some of the issues we're going to talk about, I'm sure, like data center consolidation and some of the other aspects of IT, are all things that we want to make sure that we are moving in lockstep, not necessarily in as part of another organization, but certainly that our efforts are at least complementary and certainly not diametrically opposed to any of those things.
You had said earlier that TIGDA is like no other IG office across the government. Does that also include your role as CIO? I mean, are there do other IGs, do you know, have CIOs? And do you have a kind of an IG-CIO group?
Well, that's interesting that you should mention that. There is the Council for Inspectors General. We just formed recently a working group for CIOs, and so that's just getting off the ground. And we have a number of things that we're talking about in terms of how we might be able to serve our community, because we do have some unique requirements that are different from the other types of functions that go on within an organization. So there are chain of custody issues. There's the data security aspect of this. There are a number of areas where we think we might be able to drive some efficiencies within our own community, separate and apart from those that we might derive at a much higher level.
All right. Sounds like maybe something to follow up. If you just had maybe one or two meetings so far, maybe we'll have to circle back around and figure out who to follow up with later. Let me talk a little bit about your office a little bit. How many federal employees do you have? How many contractors? What was your IT budget for 2011?
In terms of the number of employees we have, I believe today we have 46 federal employees. I have but one contractor that helps us with some code development. But for the most part, we are self-sufficient. Now, that's not to say that we don't rely on our vendors for support. So, for example, we are a Microsoft shop, not shilling for Microsoft, but that's a statement of fact. And we rely heavily on our relationship with them to help us as we deploy Exchange, as we deploy SharePoint, as we deploy other products that they provide, SQL and what have you. So we rely heavily on those folks. We rely heavily on our hardware vendors as we prosecute our mission and try to figure out, well, what's the next logical step? What do we do to solve this particular problem that is being posed by one of our business partners?
But even like, as you said, there's application development, there's even IT security, all that's kind of done in-house?
That is correct.
We'll have to talk about this in a little bit because I think the workforce is a big issue. But real quick, I just want to circle back around your IT budget for 2011. Can you give us an idea?
For 2011, it was approximately $4.5 million. Now, when you stop and think about that, that may sound like a substantial number. And that is exclusive of salaries and benefits and what have you. So I don't want to mislead anybody. That's what we would generally refer to as the discretionary funding that we have. And I'll use little d, no caps, no bolding. But when you stop and think about it, well, what are the things that an organization like ours has to have? Well, we are fairly mobile, so I have to have a lot of telecommunications capabilities in place. I have to have equipment in place that my employees can utilize. I've got to pay for the service fees that are associated with that, licensing, maintenance, all of those sorts of things. And so at the end of the day, once you have started through that entire budget and realized, well, I have to allocate this much for this activity and this much for this activity, there's not a lot left to go around. And the challenge is then, as they relate to innovation and bringing new thought and new processes into the organization, are significant.
All right, sounds like you gave us a little bit of a heads up on your priorities. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll hit upon some of those priorities. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is George Jacobson, the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration's Chief Information Officer.
Sound familiar?
Where's my data stored? Who owns it? How many duplicates exist? How much file data is unused? How are we going to pay for all of it?
Vion Corporation's Capacity Services is the answer. Your organization needs a trusted advisor with the right technical tools and the right financial expertise to solve big storage problems for good. For over 31 years, Vion Corporation and Hitachi Data Systems have been planning and preparing to solve big data problems for the government at the exabyte level. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com. Whether your organization calls it cloud, utility computing, managed services, or capacity services, at the core is the rapid provisioning of information technology infrastructure. At Vion Corporation, they pioneered capacity services 10 years ago. Vion was awarded the first and currently holds the largest federal government capacity services contract. They provide government IT owners an agile financial vehicle for meeting mission-critical IT needs. Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been delivering IT solutions to the government for over 31 years. Visit Vion.com to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is George Jacobson, the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration's CIO. Now, George, before break, we talked a little bit about the mission of TIGDA. How do you, as the CIO, support that mission? What are you hoping to get done over the next 6 or 9 months?
My First and foremost, the highest priority I have is ensuring that I can provide the kind of enterprise resilience that I think an organization like ours requires. Our investigators are out or could be out on the street 24/7, predicated upon the threat, the circumstances. And we need to make sure that we can support them no matter what the circumstances happen to be. So while we can plan for certain events, hurricanes, snowstorms, those sorts of things that you can see, what you can't necessarily predict are the human error, the human action, thunderstorms that come up suddenly, or earthquakes, as a matter of fact, that materialize out of nowhere. And how do we position ourselves to be able to be responsive to those in a minimally disruptive fashion? I don't want to say uninterruptible, because that always comes with a price tag, but certainly something that's minimal in terms of the impact to our users.
And just let me jump in real quick. When you talk about making sure that the employees in the field obviously have that enterprise resilience, you're talking about basically data anywhere, anytime, applications anywhere, anytime.
Yes, I think you've hit the nail on the head in terms of our being able to provide the systems, the information that those users need in a variety of ways, whether it's available through a handheld device, whether it's available on their laptop, or if they could go somewhere to get the information. That's what we have to be able to provide. And so my focus has been since I got here and will be for the foreseeable future. How do we improve our robustness? How do we make sure that we are able to meet those demands? Even though it's not specifically stated in our charter 24/7, we've got to be able to provide that. So that's the first thing that's on my list. The second thing that's on my list is, like a lot of technologies, you know, Moore's Law, and in a very short period of time, you can have some obsolete technology on your hand. And one of the things that we're dealing with right now is our laptop refresh. We have reached the end of our contractual period with them, and we need to replace those units. I'm afraid I can't say much more about that because we've already entered into the procurement cycle here, but that's one of the things that is going to be high on my list of priorities, because I've got 1,100 units that I've got to replace. Somehow I have to keep all those balls in the air and ensure that none of them fall on the floor while we take the old units out of service, bring the new ones in. And there are things that we're doing now in parallel while the procurement cycle moves off on its own, but you know, making sure that our images are good, making sure that once we have the selected platform that those images are going to work properly on that device and that we can provide the user with the kind of reliable capabilities that they need to have.
So let me jump in. I know you can't talk much because it's procurement sensitive, but you talk about laptops, and there's this big push, big interest in tablet computers. Yeah. Are you able to give us anything about it? Was tablets going to be part of that potentially, or is it too hard to say now?
One of the things that we looked at as we were examining the platforms is whether or not there was a place for tablets in our operation. And one of the things that we have found, and if you read some of the research on this and talk to some of the people that had some experience, one of the things that we found was that tablets and, well, we'll just leave it at that rather than get into proprietary names, but those types of devices are very good if you are a consumer of the information as opposed to a content creator or generator. If you are in the latter category, they are not fungible items. Now, I'm sure that some of the vendors are probably already screaming at that comment, but I'm basing that on our own observations and the observations and the research that's been presented by some of the research organizations out there and some of the other organizations that have tried to be early adapters of this and what they're coming to find. So there may be a place for that in our enterprise as we move forward. We made the decision several years ago as part of our telework program that we were just simply going to go with the laptops. You can count on, you know, your fingers and toes the number of desktops that we employ throughout the enterprise because of kiosk type arrangements and some other things that we use them for. But for the most part, everything is done on a laptop, and so that is the platform of choice. And we see that being the case for the foreseeable future.
All right. I'll make sure I put your email address and phone number on our website so those vendors can scream at you. Let me ask you a little bit more about some of your other priorities. Obviously, you mentioned telework. That's a big priority of yours. Give me a sense of how that fits into bigger issue around both enterprise, you know, data enterprise systems, laptops refresh? How's telework fitting all there?
Well, that was one of the reasons we went to the telework concept, or embraced the telework concept, which, by the way, we started back in 2003 and got into it in a big way in 2004. Today, 83 or 84% of the employees here at TIGDA telework in some fashion or other. If we looked at the episodic inclusion there, that would probably push that number even higher. But when I talk about that 80-some-odd percent number, I'm talking about the people that are, where it's a minimum of one day a week, as much as 5 days a week. So when people ask us, are we planning to increase on that, I don't know how much more we could really increase it. But we'll continue to look for ways for people to be able to leverage that capability. In terms of the equipment, the laptop was critical to that. We have recently revitalized and rebuilt our virtual private network foundation, the core of that capability, to now include wireless capability. So we're still piloting that with a larger group of users, but we're very excited and very confident that we have put together a very rock-solid configuration. That wireless configuration is not limited to broadband, but it is allows for Wi-Fi connectivity. There is rules of engagement that have to be observed for all of these things. And as we all know, especially in the security environment, the weakest element is usually the human element. But for the most part, that's where we're headed. Telework was deployed, employed by the organization as a way to improve the experience, to help us manage some of our costs. From the time we have deployed the telework capability, we've now reduced our footprint by some 15 locations. We have reduced our footprint in four more in terms of the actual square footage that we occupy. And the benefit to the employee has been an increase, an uptick, as measured by the annual survey, in their job satisfaction, their ability to balance their work-life schedule. Now, we have seen a couple of people who are just workaholics, and, you know, you're getting messages at 2 and 3 a.m. Sometimes that's a good thing, and other times you're wondering, this could have waited until a more typical business hour. But for the most part, it has been a big plus across the enterprise.
All right, well, a lot to cover there. Let's take another quick break. When we come back, let's hit upon some of those priorities you mentioned. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is George Jacobson, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration's Chief Information Officer.
Sound familiar?
Where's my data stored? Who owns it? How many duplicates exist? How much file data is unused? How are we going to pay for all of it?
Vion Corporation's Capacity Services is the answer. Your organization needs a trusted advisor with the right technical tools and the right financial expertise to solve big storage problems for good. For over 31 years, Vion Corporation and Hitachi Data Systems have been planning and preparing to solve big data problems for the government at the exabyte level. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com. Whether your organization calls it cloud, utility computing, managed services, or capacity services, at the core is the rapid provisioning of information technology infrastructure. At Vion Corporation, they pioneered capacity services 10 years ago. Vion was awarded the first and currently holds the largest federal government capacity services contract. They provide government IT owners an agile financial vehicle for meeting mission-critical IT needs. Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been delivering IT solutions to the government for over 31 years. Visit Vion.com to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is George Jacobson, the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration's CIO. Now, George, before break, we were talking a little bit about your priorities. Telework came up, and one of the things you mentioned was the Wi-Fi broadband pilot that you guys are doing around your virtual private network, your VPN. Give me a sense of how that works, because I think one of the big issues that a lot of agencies have around telework, and we can talk all day about the culture issue, but the one, I think, technology issue that's left is that VPN, is that Wi-Fi, is that security piece. So give me a sense of how that pilot works. How many people, how'd you make it work?
Well, when we first started the program, we would only accept a wired connection. And in some instances, well, we started off back in the day, it was dial-up. There were very few people that had high-speed connectivity. But that evolved over time, and we were successful in terms of connecting people through their various ISPs. One of the things that we ran into is that given the kind of mobile workforce that we have, folks were finding themselves in airports, in train stations, in their car, trying to figure out, not while they were actually driving, by the way, but trying to figure out how they might be able to connect. And so that led us to some experimentation with cellular technology and being able to get some broadband connectivity. And then there was the confluence of events with 3G, 4G, improving the speeds, and the proliferation of Wi-Fi hotspots. The crystallizing moment was when we realized that in the hotels, what was happening was you may have what appeared to be a wired connection, but that was probably just wired down to the closet on the floor, and then it was wireless somewhere else into the building, down to their hub and out to the ISP. And that, and coupled with the fact that, well, you don't always get the best coverage in a particular location, whether it's a cellular call or even Wi-Fi. So they add another factor to that, and that is with the proliferation of high-speed connectivity in the homes. Well, guess what? A lot of those routers are coming with wireless capabilities. Even if the mom and dad aren't interested in having the wireless capabilities turned on, if you've got teenagers, they all want to be doing Wi-Fi from their room, and mom and dad are not real keen about tearing up the walls to pull in some, you know, Cat 7 cabling into the bedroom. So what do? They turn on the Wi-Fi, and then it occurs to mom and dad at some point, well, what if they're using it, why can't I use it? What I did when I came on board is I said, look, we're going to take a look at this VPN platform that we have in place. Let's try and figure out what are all the pieces we have to have in place to make this thing work, regardless of what the carrier signal is. So I said I wanted to see something that was going to work with wired, with broadband, and with Wi-Fi. And we've done that. We've accomplished it. We have pieces from three separate vendors that are integrated as part of this solution. We have a little bit of custom code that sits on top of that that prevents some other things from happening. We've had it tested. We had the code tested that we wrote. We ran it through some code analysis tools. We found, I'm proud to say, that we found one vulnerability that could have been exploited, which we corrected before we even put it out into the test environment. The testers that came in and looked at this said, in 17 years of doing this, we haven't seen anything quite this good. Are there still risks? Of course, there's still risks. We try to manage this through user behavior. It's part of why we're piloting this and getting folks to see what their experience is. But the hope is that we've taken the ability and extended the ability to connect in airports, in train stations, in hotel rooms, in a wireless fashion, even out on the road. Literally, in a car, an agent pulls it over on the side of the road and needs to connect. They can do that and pull down critical information that might be timely in terms of putting them in harm's way. And so that's what we're trying to accomplish, what we think we've accomplished. And as that pilot unfolds across the enterprise, we'll know more with certainty.
About how many people, and when do you expect to go into full production with the Wi-Fi broadband pilot?
We have approximately 130 people in the pilot at the moment. We have 860 some odd people here in TIGTA. Not all of them are road warriors. But at some point, it'll be just become a financial decision in terms of buying the various piece parts that allow us to move out on this, just like anything else. It's all driven by funding.
Let me move the conversation a little bit over to security. Obviously, one thing about TIGTA and the IRS more broadly is obviously a lot of sensitive information. We were kind of talking offline about the amount of data you guys do have. How do you ensure your systems and data are protected? Because I think that's probably the thing that would keep you up at night the most.
Absolutely keeps me up at night. I worry about that all the time. In fact, before we relocated to this to these offices, our offices were directly across the street from the Washington Post. And I used to jokingly say, we don't need this data spilling out onto the street, given where we are located. We take security very seriously, as does the IRS, and so we are constantly looking at ways to improve the security of our storage, of our systems, of our telecommunications. We monitor them. We make sure that people have the proper training. They go through annual security and privacy training. They can't even get enabled for their VPN until they've gone through some training. And so we require that certificate before we'll even deploy it. So we look at this very seriously. We have an IT security group in-house that is my watchdog, that they're always coming to me and saying, how are you coming on your plan of action and milestones in terms of rectifying these things that we've discovered over the course of time? And I'm proud to say that we are continuing to work our way through those elements and correcting them.
Do you find that because you work with auditors and you work with investigators who maybe get a different kind of glimpse into the challenges that are out there around cyber or just how bad the viruses and attempts can be, that the insider threat maybe is less intense?
I wouldn't say that it's less intense. One of the interesting things about human behavior is for a certain, I don't want to say generation in terms of age, but for a certain group of users, they were very accustomed to modulating their tone when they were in a conversation with someone, putting papers away when someone came into their office, not leaving things on fax machines or printers, locking things up when they went home at night. When we introduced IT, now roughly 30 years, all of a sudden that same information that was up on a video screen, people weren't paying attention to what was going on. And so they'd walk away from their workstation and leave sensitive information on the screen. They would, you know, leave stuff on the printer because they had hit print and forgot about it and leave it out there, all these sorts of things. So it became important that when we started talking about security, that we understood that it was the technical, the operation, and the managerial aspects that all needed to be addressed. The technical piece is probably the easiest piece because there are certain things I can do. I can lock down that machine fairly effectively. I can encrypt the data so that when it's in motion, people, even if they can sniff it, it's going to be gibberish. I can put screens on top of the screen that make it difficult for someone to shoulder surf. But it's the behavior aspects, you know, setting yourself up in the airport so that someone can't look over your shoulder, setting yourself outside the hot spot so that people aren't going to observe what you're doing, not leaving your laptop anywhere when it's unattended, but certainly don't leave it running when you step away from it. These sorts of things constantly have to be reinforced. And so what is it about that human nature? Now, you watch the millennials and that generation that are coming into the workplace, and this is second nature to them. And you explain to them what the issues are, and a lot of them get it right away. Some are still a little reluctant to say, well, why are you inhibiting me? And, you know, it poses some managerial challenges. But once they understand what's at stake, they, for the most part, they are very quick to say, oh, I get it. Yeah, I'll comply. So it becomes less of a problem than you might think.
All right. Well, we're almost out of time. Before I let you go, I wanted to learn a little bit more about your background. How long have you been the CIO at TIGTA? Where else have you worked, inside, outside of government?
Sure. I've been here just over a year. Prior to that, I was with the IRS for approximately 8 years. Prior to that, I spent about 27 years in the private sector in a variety of organizations, GTE, Lockheed Martin, LexisNexis, SysCorp. I have interesting experiences from each and every one of those. I brought all of those lessons learned, all that experience with me, and I think I have something of value to offer my colleagues here in the federal government, and I'm happy to do that.
Very nice. Sounds like we could probably talk for another half hour, but unfortunately we are out of time. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today was George Jacobson, the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration's Chief Information Officer. George, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us.
Thank you, Jason. Always a pleasure, and I'll look forward to talking with you still further.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
Register today for a firm's luncheon on Friday, January 13th, and hear from the new U.S. CIO, Stephen Van Roekel, in a fireside chat with a firm president and CIO from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Darren Ash. In his first major address inside the Capitol Beltway, Van Roekel will discuss the role of technology in closing that widening productivity gap between government and industry. That's January 13th at the Sofitel Hotel, McPherson Square, from 11:30 to 1 p.m. This briefing is sure to be a sellout, so register today, affirm.com.
The Department of Defense faces some big changes in the coming years. I'm Federal News Radio's DoD reporter, Jared Serbin. We help you track those changes every Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 3 with On DoD. Each week, we'll talk one-on-one with defense experts and senior managers about the policies, programs, and innovations that affect warfighters and how the military will continue to meet its mission. That's On DoD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.